I James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon, wherever you are, all around the world and all across this beautiful country of ours. Welcome to the Guy James Show. It's an honor to have you with us today. No storms here today. How great is that? Usually we get them this time of afternoon. And today, everything looks reasonably well, I think. So we're in for a good afternoon. I better turn my headphones up so I can hear myself. There we go. Once again, the staff is off today. We've laid the staff off for the summer. So it's just going to be me, the producer and writers and director and board op and all that. They're all going to be off for the entire summer. They're vacationing in Argentina. That's what they said. They said they were going to go hiking or some of them said they were going to go to Argentina. What? Well, that's what they said. Some of them said they were going to go hiking on the Appalachian Trail, and some of them said they were going to go to Argentina. Why would I doubt anybody? Why would anybody tell anybody a story like that? Never mind. I don't think people believe my staff, and that really bothers me that someone would think my staff would, lie to me. Certainly they wouldn't. Nobody would do that. They wouldn't tell you they were going hiking and not be going hiking. I saw one of them's car had sleeping bags and tents and everything else in it. I saw it myself. Really, I did. Sad news today. Just a couple of hours ago, I suppose, right around there, we find out about the death of Farrah Fawcett. Certainly an icon in showbiz, and what a beautiful gal she was, and from all indications, what a nice personality she had as well. A lot of people loved Sarah Fawcett and followed Sarah Fawcett and Farrah Fawcett and kept track of her terrible disease and the fight she put up for the last couple of years. So Farrah Fawcett is no more, but she will always be remembered, particularly by a lot of young men who had that big poster up on their wall in the college dorms and all that when she was on, Charlie's Angels show. 62 years old, gone, and it's a shame. If you hear any weird noises in the background, the landscaping crew around here is giving all the palm trees today what we call here in Florida the hurricane cut. We usually wait a few weeks into the hurricane season and then cut the palm trees They're half naked now. They cut a lot of the fronds off so that if a hurricane does hit, there won't be so much wind resistance with, you know, too many branches, too many fronds, as we call them, to knock the trees over. It helps in that respect, and it also helps from all the debris. So all of our palm trees here at the Guy James Show studio, I believe 23 of them, are getting their hair cut, their yearly hurricane cut, as we call it today. So if you hear a chainsaw in the background, you'll know what's happening. And unfortunately, one of the trees has succumbed to some sort of a disease. Don't know what it is. They get little mushroom things like growing on the side, and you know they're done for when they get that. They get this disease. So one of the trees has to go, but we're planting a new one. Can't let the studios not look good, you know. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us on the program today. We have a very interesting program for you today, I believe. Coming up in the second hour, right after the news at the top of the hour, we're expecting a call from Representative John Yarmuth from the 3rd District of Kentucky. And he is going to talk to us about health care and how that's proceeding in the United States Congress. I also want to congratulate him, and we'll tell him when he calls, for sponsoring that credit card bill of rights that went to the president's desk not so long ago. And then at 4:30, we've got a rather unusual guest. Some of you may remember at the Democratic Convention last year, what was it, August, I guess, when I was in Denver, I interviewed a gal by the name of Martha Zoller. Martha Zoller. Perhaps you saw her on CNN the other night. She's a popular conservative talk show host from Atlanta. Nice gal. She stayed at the same bed and breakfast where I stayed at, and we actually had a Chinese dinner together one evening talking about politics. Very nice gal. She is, like I said, a conservative talk show host from Atlanta, the Atlanta area. She's on around 10 stations around Georgia, I think it is, and we have her on to talk about the Mark Sanford mess. And before I go too far, I do want to update you, let you know, and pass it on, tell your neighbor, tell everybody you know that Bob Kincaid is, as we speak, in the Hart Senate office building in Washington, D.C., attending the mountaintop removal hearings conducted by Ben Cardin, I believe. So you will want to watch the news tonight to see possibly Bob Kincaid being hauled out of the Hart Senate office building in shackles. It could happen. It could happen. Bob is a real revolutionary type guy. And you've seen him. You've seen that picture of him, all of him, when he's in his overcoat. He won't have that on today. But remember that picture I took of him in Washington, D.C.? Have all of you seen that? The Capitol building's over his shoulder, and he's got that hat on and his sunglasses and an overcoat. And I think one of the pictures is with Senator Sherrod Brown. But there's another one of Bob standing there by his side. He looks so serious, you know. He looks like the kind of guy that, you know, if he got in the Hart Senate office building hearing and they said things that didn't suit him, Bob would stand up and say something. So expect him to get arrested tonight. He called me a couple of hours ago and told me where he's at and what he's doing. And I said, Bob, there's one thing I want to know, the most important thing of all of this to me, and I know it's selfish, is, Bob, are you going to dine at Fogo de Chao, that beef bonanza place on Pennsylvania Avenue tonight? Because he said he might, and he said if he did it, he would do it in remembrance of me. Then they would have a moment of silence. Yeah, right. If Bob goes to that restaurant tonight, along with whomever he's with that happened to go there, they won't be thinking about me. I can tell you that right now. They'll be feasting their eyes on the beef, the lamb chops, the pork, everything that goes. Oh, don't get me started on that. But I just want you to know, I think it was terrible of Bob to do that. It may have been me that brought it up, but I said, Bob, you're not going to eat at the Fogo de Chao without me, are you? And instead of being a gentleman and saying, no, I wouldn't do that, guy, he said, well, you know, I've kind of been thinking about it. And if we don't do that, we'll go down and eat at Kramer's, the bookstore on Connecticut. So either way, have fun, Bob, and do keep in mind that Bob will be back in his regular seat on Monday. I don't know yet whether John's going to fill in tonight or not. But Bob's attending these very important hearings, and they're especially important to Bob and the people that live around him about the mountaintop removal. I don't know how many of you have taken the time to go see pictures of what happens with the mountaintop removal, and we all know about the tragedy down in Tennessee last year where that flimsy dam broke and all that sludge with just God knows what all in it. Bob actually showed me a picture not far from where he lives, where there's one of those dams next to a school. And, of course, the coal companies, they're going to have their way. They're just going to have their way, as always. You just know they will. You know they will. I think we've got somebody on the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn. You're talking about the Argentine restaurant?
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh.
He's going there? Oh, man.
Yeah, him
and... Don't forget, I used to live in D.C.
Yeah, well, he and I went there, I don't know, when was it, a month or so ago?
Oh, man.
And you know, for him to go there without me, it brings tears to my eyes, man.
Oh, it would, too, man. It would.
Have you ever? You know, and like I mentioned to the folks, first of all, the amount of food that you can get.
Oh, yeah.
All you want.
Oh, God.
All you want. They'll serve you meat all night long if you want it. But the quality of it was just.
Oh, yeah.
Just absolutely. I mean, it'd be one thing going to a Ponderosa Steakhouse or one of those things and eating cheap meat. But this is the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to tell me that. With a couple of bottles of dark wine, heaven.
You know, Bob warned me when we went in there. He said, you know, they got one of the most beautiful salad bars you'll ever see. But, guys, said, be careful. Don't eat much of that salad.
Don't take it. Don't stuff yourself up. Because they'll have you wait a while.
Yeah.
They'll have you wait a while and load up on salad so you don't take the meat. Eat the salad sparingly and just load up on the meat.
Next time I go, all I'm going to do, I'm going to go over to the salad bar, and I'm going to get me a bowl of those big, gigantic stuffed Spanish olives. That's all I want.
Oh, yeah, that's good, and also their cheeses are good.
Yeah, yes. Maybe a couple of little pieces of cheese, but the rest of it, uh-uh. I'm going straight to the...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Bob, I don't know if you heard when Bob and I were there the last time, but Bob cheated on me. Here's what he did. Here's what happened, and I hate to expose you for this. So we're eating and eating and eating, and you know, one filet mignon wrapped in bacon and any kind of beef you can imagine. Bob had some lamb chops and leg of lamb and all that kind of stuff. And I had a few little sausages, but basically I'm a beef eater. The Parmesan pork was pretty amazing too. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh yeah.
Now I'm slobbering. I'm getting this on the microphone here. But we're eating and eating and eating. We're getting to the point where, you know, it's getting tough. It's getting tough. The stomach's saying, no, that's enough. And the taste buds are going, hey, bud, shovel it in. And so Bob, right in the middle of this, says, well, you know what? I'm going to have a cigarette. So he goes up and goes outside and has a smoke, see? And what he's doing is he's out there getting his act together and letting things settle a little bit and walked a little bit of it off while I had to sit there. I don't smoke, and I used to, and I was sitting there, and I had to keep eating, unfortunately. And so I had my little coaster turned over to green and just kept after it. And not long after Bob came back in, I had to flip it over to red. I couldn't do it anymore.
What you have to do, the trick is, don't eat a morsel all day.
I'm not sure we did eat much. I you know what those things
no,
are?
Don't eat anything.
Yeah, we. I think we
the
had
only
breakfast.
Thing that's going in your mouth is toothpaste and water that day. That's the only thing.
Yeah, that's a good tactic. But I'm glad you've been there. You can testify. You know that they have one. They have one in Miami Beach.
Oh yeah, well they have them. They have.
There's like 10 of them around the country, and a couple in South
America.
Yeah,
You know, New York has a version, but it's more local. But Boca de Chao, it's, oh, man. It's, you know what you should try next time you go?
What?
Moby Dick's Persian food.
Oh, really? Persian food.
Blows your mind.
Is it beef and pork? Because I don't eat
No pork. I'm beef and lamb.
Oh, yeah. I don't eat lamb.
Beef, lamb, and chicken.
I don't eat chicken. I'm one of the weirdest ones you've ever seen. If it swims or flies, I won't eat it, and I don't eat lamb either.
Oh, well, they have a beef kebab, too.
I'm okay, then.
They have a beef kebab.
I'll hit them on a kebab.
I tell you, and they have a beautiful wine rack. It's surrounded by wine racks all around. Oh, man. What you really end up paying for is the beverages. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
fairly reasonable, but that's what you end up paying for. And I know you don't really drink, but...
I would,
Dark wine just adds to the whole...
Oh, I'm sure. I cheated, I think, when I was there last time, maybe had a glass of wine someplace.
Well, that's one of the occasions you should be drinking wine. If you're a non-drinker, to go to that place and not have a glass of wine, it's almost... a blasphemy. It really is.
Well, I several years ago, in fact, about a dozen years ago, a doctor told me for health reasons for my heart, I shouldn't drink any alcohol. And
alcohol? I thought at least dark wine is good for your health.
No booze, no caffeine.
I
never was a big drinker anyway. I enjoyed a beer once in a while. Nothing better than an ice-cold beer when you're hot, or a glass of wine now and then, or even a, you know, I like a little Southern Comfort, or a little of this, a little of that. But I wasn't an ouzo. I like ouzo.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Oh, I forgot. The last time I drank much was on election night. I promised everybody here that I would drink a shot of ouzo for every state that Obama took, and I was doing fine. I was going along, and I was doing fine right up until the time they released a whole bunch of states, like, all at once.
Oh, man.
I was having a shot here and a shot there, and all of a sudden there was, like, you know, seven states up east that came in all together, and I, whew, what an evening.
I emptied a bottle of Hennessy that night. I think a lot of people emptied some bottles.
Oh, yes. You know that crazy ouzo. My wife is Greek, they love ouzo. And when people give you gifts, a lot of times Greek people, they give you a bottle of ouzo. So I got a cabinet downstairs that got enough ouzo to get half the county here drunk. You know, I hadn't touched it in, I don't know, 5 years, I suppose, at least.
DC's only a 2-hour Amtrak ride from me, so I popped down there, you know, because when I first contacted, that's how I got to know you guys when I was living in Washington.
Yeah. Okay, now
you would go to
Grand Central?
No, actually Penn Station.
Okay, you go to Penn Station and take it right to Union Station.
Yeah.
2 hours.
It's an hour and 45 minutes, sometimes 2 hours.
No kidding. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I have a few relatives that are all over the city. One of my cousins is moving there this fall, who I'm very close to, so I'll probably be going down more often.
Are you familiar with Kramer's up on Connecticut Avenue, just there at DuPont Circle? It's a place that's got the bookstore in the front and the restaurant in the back, kind of an eclectic restaurant.
No.
Okay, that's a really cool place, too. It's right down on... just about a half a block north of the circle, of DuPont Circle.
And U Street has some of the best jazz clubs as far as atmosphere and actual talent going in.
Mm.
The U Street corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I fell in love with D.C., and I really lived it up when I was living on the, you know, because I lived there on two separate occasions, when I was married and when I was going through my divorce. And, you know, I left it there, but at the end of the day, you know, most of my family was in New York, and that's why I left.
Yeah, well, gee, that's great, though, only an hour and 45-minute train trip.
Yeah.
What do you stop, like, how many times do you stop? You stop in, what, Philly?
Well, you stop in Philly.
Baltimore?
You stop in Trenton, Philly, Baltimore, and one stop, Odenton, then D.C.
I'll tell you one thing. If I next time I go to Washington is something I've never thought about before, but I suppose to myself and everybody else that lives in D.C., if I ever get on the metro, I'm riding in the middle cars from now on.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't ride in the back car or front
car. That's what I used to tell my friends. And, you know, when you go to, always go either towards the back or the middle. Never go into the front, okay? And that's the same thing with New York City subways. In case of a terror attack, always go stay in towards the back because people are naturally lazy, and they want to go to where the stairs are. So they usually, you know, more bodies tend to be in the middle.
Of all of them that got killed this time, where were they? Were they not in the back of that one train?
We're in D.C.?
Yeah.
I think both trains, in both instances, they were in the front.
Oh, okay. Okay. I know they rear-ended that other train, and I thought...
they did? I thought it was...
Yeah, they rear-ended
two trains collided on the same track, because seemed like one was just...
One was sitting, and the other one, you know how they stop once in a while to even out the schedule. One was sitting, and the other one actually stopped and then took off again and rear-ended the one that was sitting, terrible mess. It was the Fort Totten stop right there.
Oh, yeah, and I pass by that stop all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, things happen for a reason.
Yeah, isn't that the line that the School for the Deaf is on?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought, was it Gallup?
The University of, because two lines stopped there, the orange and the red.
Uh-huh. Here we are having old home day, you and I, talking about D.C. But folks, don't let that deter you when you go to Washington, D.C. There was a horrible accident on the metro the other day, but still, it's the best way to travel around Washington.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a devastating thing that happened the other day, but, you know, it's going to happen sometime, somewhere. I guess if your number's up, it's up. Kevin, thanks so much for calling today. Good to hear from you.
Okay, no problem. It's good to have other conversations besides politics.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a really good picture of you, what, on MySpace?
Which one?
You're one of my, you signed up for on my MySpace page, or I'm on yours, or I don't know how that works. Anyway,
Facebook.
Facebook. That's it. Yeah, that's the, so now.
Oh, thank you.
I sit here and I picture, I know what you look like now. Well,
okay.
Hey, so here we are, Kevin and I having a conversation. The rest of you just talk amongst yourselves. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Okay, then.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, you too, brother. Bye.
Yeah, Kevin, boy, what a tragedy that was in Washington with the Metro. Gosh, and I go out that Fort Totten way all the time when I go there. Goes to some places that I like to go to, and what a tragedy. You know, so many people use that train in that town, and it is such a wonderful, wonderful system. And I know they'll get to the bottom of it and find out what happened, and hopefully nothing like that will ever happen again. Let's see. Has there been any news since yesterday? Has there been anything in the news since yesterday? Oh, yeah. I have decided... And I'm going to make a prediction right now based on pure logic here, that come 2012, when we have another presidential election, it's going to have to be Sarah Palin. Going to have to be. Why do I say that? Because at the rate we're going, there's not going to be any male Republicans left who are fit to run for the office. we'll still have... Romney, he'll be around to pick up the pieces, and I think Huckleberry will hang around too. He's starstruck over the presidency. Romney's willing to wait. He's still young. Pawlenty, I don't know about Tim Pawlenty. There's something about him that just doesn't seem right as a presidential candidate. I just don't think so. But, I think those three will be hanging around looking at it. Now we know that Sanford is out of it for sure. But Huck and Palin, she's keeping her nose in the politics every single day. There isn't anything goes on. Who was it told me recently that, well, maybe it was Kevin yesterday. They feel like Sarah Palin's a New Yorker. She's there so much. How do you feel about what went on yesterday? After you've had 24 hours to think about it, a little over 24, actually about 25 hours and 25 and a half hours now to think about it. Maybe 25 and a quarter hours to be close to the mark. How do you feel about what happened yesterday with that press conference? Have you had a time to take a good look at it and digest it and understand how you feel? Were your first impressions right? Were your first emotions about it on the money? Have you changed how you feel about Mark Sanford? We have seen a couple of pictures on the internet today, supposedly, of this Maria. One that I saw was that, and maybe all of you have seen this if you want to look it up, and has not been confirmed. Take a look at Zippy, Z-I-P-P-Y, 1300.blogspot.com. Zippy1300.blogspot.com. And take a look at the pictures of Maria Beatrice Norfal, I think it is, who's the president of the National Agency for Development of Argentina. That is one that they're saying is likely her, the mistress. But I've heard so many people chastise others for, being a little excited over this, over the Sanford thing. I don't know if gleeful is the right word. And some of them have come on and said, you know, the guy was really a man about it. We heard that so many times yesterday. He was a man about it, and he stood there and he admitted it. And he told the truth. He's brave, and he's honest. And then we find out later that the Columbia, South Carolina newspaper had possession of emails between him and his lover ever since Christmas. A couple of questions come up there. Why did they have those since Christmas and not do anything about it? They are a newspaper, after all. So he talks to this girl yesterday morning when she bushwhacks him coming back to the airport. We're in Atlanta, I guess. And he tells her this story about how he was down in Argentina. He decided to go someplace more exotic and drive along the coast. And he find out the road out of Buenos Aires is only 2 miles. And so he wasn't doing any driving along the coast. And at that point, there was a lot of conjecture on what he might be doing, actually. And he told her a whole bunch of fat lies. And didn't admit to being there with his lover at that point, and just said he pretty much was getting away for a while, that he was tired of being in that bubble in the governorship, and he just had to get away for a while, and he told her some whoppers, really. And he said nothing about any infidelity. And it leads me to believe that since he'd been down there for, what, almost a week, and that has to be explained to me, why did he need a week? Why didn't a phone call do? But if he had to be man enough to go down and talk to this woman in person and supposedly end this relationship, is what we're led to believe, if that is the case, why did it take him almost a week to do it? Wouldn't have a couple of hours done it? I don't know. And then we find out that his wife had known it for some 5 months. And his children had known it for 5 months, his boys, that he talked about repeatedly through his confession. And we find out, and we come to the conclusion, the only conclusion that you can derive from all of this is the fact that the man only scheduled a press conference at 2 o'clock yesterday because he knew he'd been caught. When he came back to the airport yesterday morning, and this lone reporter was waiting on him, he had no intention, this is my conjecture, he had no intentions of having a news conference and confessing this whole thing yesterday. He was going to let it go and keep it in the family, that his wife and children knew it, and his mistress and her children knew it. Other than that, nobody knew. That's what I believe happened. That he found out that they were kind of on his tail. He was unprepared for all the press that had come out about this, about him being gone. He'd found out about the lieutenant governor putting a bug in everybody's ear. Hey, the governor's gone. What am I going to do? And he was visibly shaken by all this, and he got back to his office and thought, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm going to have to confess. And that's what happened. He didn't become Mr. Integrity all of a sudden. Not at all. Nothing could be further from the truth. He didn't go out and be a man about this. Not at all. You know, we have right-wingers criticizing Democrats for, you know, celebrating Sanford's mistake. Tell me something. Didn't the Clinton episode set off the biggest Republican party that was ever held in Washington, D.C.? Were they not just beside themselves with joy over the Clinton deal? Linda Tripp, Lucianne Goldberg, those people, Ann Coulter. Didn't a bunch of the pundits end up getting their jobs because of the Clinton scandal? I mean, it was a Lucianne Goldberg. She had a popular website for a long time, as we know. And the man Coulter has been out on the tour ever since that happened. Her in her one black dress and her toothpick-like legs walking around and her Adam's apple. You know, on a news or an interview almost every single night back then, gloating because of what Clinton had done. And they were doing their very best holier-than-thou act that they're so good at. And the evangelicals, and they all came out, oh, my God, the president, the family values, what are the children going to say? What are the children going to do? And now they think Democrats are somehow being uncouth over this issue? Yes, I'm sad for his wife. Yes, I'm sad for his children. That's all. That's where it ends. I'm not sad for him. I mean, stop and think about this. The Republicans had an orgasm over John Edwards and that mess, and although he wasn't an elected official at the time and had no responsibilities to the American people at the time, and they criticized Democrats for their reaction to this crazy, bizarre Sanford story. And we've got to put this whole thing in perspective. What is it that made Sanford step up and come clean? It wasn't because of any, he had an attack of integrity. Suddenly had a conscience that was bothering. No. If he hadn't been caught at the airport by that reporter for the state newspaper. And I don't know this, but I assume it has to be out of Columbia. Would he have stuck to his Appalachian hiking story? And speaking of which, was it voluntary that he told the reporter for the state that he just come back from Argentina? Or maybe she got wise to him. He didn't look like he'd just come back from hiking. Maybe she saw a luggage tag or something else. And then, like I mentioned earlier, what about that note that they had the goods on him already? I saw the reporter on TV last night. I can't remember where. The reporter for the state. She said, well, you know, it's a 3.5 hour drive from Columbia to Atlanta on a hunch. And it turned out our hunch was right. They had the hunch because of these emails. And, oh, my God, have you seen the emails that they're going back and forth? I would expect Governor Sanford to be writing a novel anytime soon. You know, what do they call those that the ladies like to read, romance novels? one of the emails suggested to me that maybe he'd be pretty good at it. Yeah. So, you know, why? And again, why did it take, I guess it was 6 days. 6 days to break off the affair. And if the trip really was to just break off the affair, and Sanford's wife knew about it 5 months ago, as he said, as he suggested in the interview yesterday, how about his wife? Why couldn't he tell her where he was? Or did she know? And just wanted to stick him and stick him really good on this, and who would blame her? And then there's the other question. He says he's been to Argentina, what, three times? Did he go there on the state's dime? Did he go there on the state's dime to visit his mistress? Did he? Do you think he will still be governor in just a few more days? Now, this is South Carolina we're talking about here. This isn't New York. This isn't New Jersey. This isn't California. This is South Carolina. And let me tell you something. I happen to know things a little bit different there. And obviously things are a little bit different in the Republican Party right now. Very different in the Republican Party. They don't know what they're going to do. They really are in a state of disarray. We're going to pause for a break. We'll discuss this some more when we come back. Don't go away.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Nothing more I can think of to say to you. But all you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true.
That song gives me chills. Gives me chills. What a show, Evita. What a show. And I particularly like the movie with Madonna doing it. Madonna's good. A good singer. I don't know how you feel about Madonna. I've always thought she was... What is she? I mean, she's a great entertainer. Whether you like her or not, you got to admit she's a showman. She's reinvented herself many times and all that. Oh, Elo, shame on you. Shame on you. Oh, my. I tell you, the people in the chat room get a little ornery now and then. They do. And that Elo, Oh, now Lauder J chimes in. Shame on you, people. Shame on you. We were talking about Governor Mark Sanford. And, my God, you know, what makes this the story so different, I guess, is most of the guys are Bill Clinton and Enzen and all the others, like Vitter and Foley and Livingston. I forgot him yesterday, Livingston. They didn't, you know, they kind of kept this, that's an odd bunch when it comes down to it. I was going to say they all kept it pretty normal, but then again, they didn't. No, they didn't keep it kind of normal. I was going to say, well, at least they had just regular relationships and kept them here in the United States. And and they did, the rest of them kept them here in the United States. But, we've got the Vitter story and his, you know, the diapers and all that. That was a little bit off the wall. And, we had, Livingston who had to quit, real quick, like, because the dominatrix and the whips and chains deals came out and all that. So he had to get out of town real quick. And Nudie Boy, he kept his close. He was an office gal, I guess. And Senator Craig, he went clear up to Minnesota for that one. I don't know. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Hi.
Hi, it's Sandra.
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
All right. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to chime in on the Sanford thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I know it probably has already been said, but what I think is really funny is that his wife was like, yeah, you're on your own, asshole. It was great to see him up there without her.
Oh, yeah. I respect her for that. She didn't do that little stand by your man thing like the rest of them have done.
Oh, yeah. It's just because you see, you know, you're so used to these freaks doing their freaky things and then expecting their poor wives to stand there. I can't think of anything more humiliating.
Let me ask you, what do you think? They're married to rich and powerful men. And let's take the examples of Craig and Vitter. Their wives stood, you know, standing in support of them both, knowing what they've been involved in, and stood there. Now, were they standing there to stand by their man so they could continue the lifestyle that they're used to? Or were they there for another reason?
Oh, you know, it beats working. I'm sorry, I'm where you're alluding to, because, you know, I mean, it must be so cynical after a while to be in those sorts of relationships, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think they know what time it is, you know, the women. I'm just thinking just from an image and sort of just as far as women go overall, I'm just so sick of seeing them, you know, debase themselves. But, hey, everybody's getting something out of it.
Well,
I'm cynical. I just think that, you know, all this, you know, love and all this, you know, come on. These people are slimy. So I assume their women are slimy, too. Sorry to say that, but.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I thought, well, okay, did they really have, you know, Craig and Vitter and Elliot Spitzer's wife? She was there beside him when he got up and did. Did they have a genuine reconciliation and they were there in the fervent desire to put their marriage back together and I'm going to show the public that I love my husband and I want to be here? Or were they there for the reasons that you said? And I'm inclined to agree with what you said.
Not only that, but who wants to go? Why should they be consigned to poverty and all that? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, okay, they can weigh they can weigh it. They'll be humiliated and they can stay married to the dirt bag and continue the way they're living. Or if they live in California, they can divorce the asses and get half. So maybe it's geography.
Geography. Oh, I don't know. I think you're right on. I really do.
Well, the whole thing is just so bizarre. It's like, dude, it's one thing for you to go and have an affair, but how are you going to disappear when you're a governor of a state? I'm just like, these people really bubble. I think they're in a bubble, and a bubble, yeah, because it's not really, it didn't make any sense how he was behaving, you know?
Oh, sure, and the nerve to think it, well, I can get away with just about anything.
Exactly. I mean, it's sort of the power. It's an interesting study, but the thing about it is this: these Republicans, it's like enough already with them. It's a regional party. And they just keep falling one by one. All I can do is laugh. I was howling. I said, oh, as soon as he disappeared, I thought, okay, that's it. He's done. And I was right. He's a freak.
You know what I heard somebody say today? I shouldn't say this on the program.
Oh, no, please do.
I heard somebody,
that means you should.
I heard somebody say in the program today that these guys talk like Republicans, but they got Democratic penises.
Well, yeah, that was John Stewart.
Was it?
liberal penises.
Yeah. They talk one game and act out another one. Oh.
Well, no, but it's kind of, you know, the sort of lengths that these weirdos have to go to get laid, too. It's like, dude, all the way to Argentina?
Yeah, that's a tough one there. Argentina, man, you know, it's $1,000 for an airplane ticket down there. Or somebody.
And,
yeah, go ahead.
And I don't want to go homophobic, but it's a woman, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably. I think yesterday at about 2:15, when he finally got down to it, there was a huge sigh of relief in the Republican caucuses. God, it was a woman.
Right, and that's the same thing with Homeboy, who was running for Ford. You know, when he said, you know, when he was at the Playboy Mansion, everyone was like, well, shoot, at least dude like women. And I'm always howling on that because, yeah, you know. You know, you can be sort of proud these days if you are with another woman, as opposed to how the Republicans seem to do it.
Well,
and it wouldn't matter, except they're so hypocritical and so hate and so much hatred directed towards gay folks. So that's why I'm bringing it up, because.
Well, they said when Inslee walked into the Senate caucus room Monday, they gave him a standing ovation. Now,
well, unlike the bathroom stall dude, yeah.
Yeah, I mean they didn't care for that deal, but he gets the ovation. Now, was it, you know, when he walked in the room and got the standing ovation, was it, yeah, right on, man, or was it? No, we respect you for owning up to it. I think it was the point.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I always think that most of the men, especially the Republican men, and I'll make a generalization, they're pretty much scared of American women anyway. They're pretty misogynist. So, yeah, I'm never surprised that they do that to their women. And then when it turns out it's, you know, whatever, it doesn't surprise me, because they seem to have so many issues with women in general. The Republicans, so.
Well, them and their evangelical friends that they're having their conference now someplace, I think, some Baptist conference of some kind, talking about how you should be submissive to your husband. Oh, boy.
Yeah, no. That's what I mean. It's sort of, you know, on one hand, I feel for some of these women who are married to the men, but then I also think, you know, they're not that, they can't be that stupid, so they must be weighing the good and the bad with it, see? Because power is what it is, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think it's all been weighed out. You're right.
Well, okay, listen, I'll let you go. Have a good show.
Thanks. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
They're asking me on the Internet where I saw the picture of this gal. Now, I've got that noted down here someplace. Where do I have that? Let me look through my notes here. Boy, do I have notes today, and not necessarily. Oh, where is it? I'll try and find it during the news break at the top of the hour. I've got a website here someplace. Let me go back through the. Well, if my brain doesn't work right, there's always the. I don't know. I've got it around here someplace, and I will find it for you during the news at the top of the hour. Johnny O is asking about it. And I want to supply that to you. I've got it, but I cannot find it at the moment. But there's a couple of different pictures, and neither of them have been absolutely positively corroborated as the right one. So I don't know yet. Where did I... Oh, that irritates me when I write something down like that and can't find it later. Ah, okay, the one that's posted on ELO right now is one of them. That's one of them. And the other, let me see here if I can knock the chat room down here for a moment. And let me see. Hoping the old history would tell me where I've been here. Naturally. I'm not sure. I'll look at it during the top of the hour. But the one posted on the chat room right now is one of them that is a possibility. And the other one is... Oh, what is the name of that? I just can't think of it right now. But anyway, they were two completely different pictures. And the one I saw had her as, here it is, zippy1300.blogspot.com. Zippy, Z-I-P-P-Y, 1300.blogspot.com/2009. And the name on this one is Maria Beatriz Norfall. And this picture is of the president of the National Agency for Development of Argentina. And the other picture from newsbazaar.com, I'm not sure. It's a different woman than this one. So I don't know if either of them are the correct one.
I can't say with any degree of certainty at all. Well, I'm going to have to hit the sneeze button. There we go. So check it out and tell me what you think. www.zippy1300.blogspot.com/2009/06. And Louder J says, "Guy, I still think it's a guy in a dress." Oh, ye of little faith. Now, come on. The man fessed up yesterday, and that should be good enough for you. I did want to mention, if I may, got a paper sitting all over the place here, that Rush Limbaugh says he thinks this is Obama's fault. Yes, Limbaugh actually said that today, that Sanford had so much stress from the stimulus money problem and all that he had to get away. The bubble that Sanford was talking about. And so he had to get away, and probably, you know, the pressure forced him in. Not understanding, Limbaugh not understanding that this happened, according to the man himself, a year ago. He'd known her for 8 years, but he only started hiking with her a year ago. You know, there's a lot of words and a lot of names for that, but hiking is never mind, don't get me started on that. And I don't know if Governor Sanford knows this, but he didn't just let down a lot of people when he spent the last week in Argentina with his mistress. He might have committed a crime. According to reports, I got this off of the Associated Press, under South Carolina law, South Carolina law now, this is South Carolina, any man or woman who shall be guilty of the crime of adultery or fornication shall be liable to indictment and on conviction, this is actually a law in South Carolina, shall be severely punished by a fine of not less than $100, nor more than $500, or imprisonment for not less than 6 months, nor more than 1 year, or by both fine and imprisonment at the discretion of the court. Adultery is the living together and carnal intercourse with each other, or habitual carnal intercourse. I guess the former is a one-night stand. The second one is more than that. With each other, without living together, of a man and a woman when either is lawfully married to some other person. So it's only adultery if it's... Well, all right, that makes sense. If either of them is lawfully married to some other person. So, fortunately for Sanford, it is not entirely clear that the South Carolina justice system has any jurisdiction over an apparent crime that he committed while he was in Argentina. And his lawyers might also argue that he can't be convicted of a criminal adultery because he and his Argentine lover were not engaged in habitual... Let's split hairs. No, don't say that. In habitual carnal intercourse, Sanford maintains that he only traveled to Argentina to see his mistress on rare occasions. So that wouldn't be habitual now, would it? No. It would be a rare occasion. Nevertheless, Sanford himself explained at yesterday's press conference that God's law indeed is there to protect you from yourself. And there are consequences if you breach that. And as it turns out, Sanford may need to be more afraid of the consequences than stem from breaching the antiquated laws of South Carolina. After all, he is the governor. And he must protect the laws and enforce the laws of South Carolina, in my humble opinion. He must. Well, we've got news coming up at the top of the hour. This has been like an episode of Inside Edition so far. We're going to pause for news, and we're going to come back in just a few minutes. Hope you'll be with us. Don't go away.
listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As thousands of workers and their unions rally today in Washington for comprehensive health care reform, AFSCME Legislative Director Chuck Loveless says that private insurers cannot continue to monopolize health care.
It's extremely important that insurance companies have to compete with the government plan option. And if the government plan option is not in the mix, we're not going to get the kind of reform that we want to see.
Loveless says AFSCME wants to see employers pay their fair share for health care reform, and the reform should not include taxing the health benefits of working families.
We want to see progressive tax policies to help pay for health care reform. We do not want to see health insurance benefits for average middle Americans to be taxed. And that is, of course, a serious policy option that is being considered right now in the United States Senate.
AFSCME also says the Medicaid expansion paid for by the federal government is a vital component of meaningful health care reform. On Tuesday, President Barack Obama signed an executive order that creates the White House Council on Automotive Communities and Workers. The executive director of the council is Obama's car czar, Ed Montgomery, and the goal is for the council to tackle issues impacting communities that have been dealt a severe blow by the downturn in the economy. The panel also includes Labor Secretary Hilda Solis and Obama's economic advisor, Larry Summers. Some Illinois workers will be impacted by the legacy of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. On July 1st, Jesse Russell reports.
In 2006, former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich signed into law legislation that would increase the minimum wage a little bit every year until it reaches $8.25 in 2010. That next raise for Illinois minimum wage workers is coming on July 1st. The increase will boost the hourly minimum wage for an estimated 400,000 workers in that state by 25 cents to $8 per hour. The federal minimum wage is currently $6.55 per hour, but that will also see a jump to $7.25 per hour on July 24th of this year.
Boston Newspaper Guild members got a close look at the details of the tentative agreement reached at the Boston Globe Wednesday, and union members will now vote on whether or not to accept it. Wages are cut by nearly 6% and job security is gone, but that's an improvement over an imposed wage cut of 23% that the Globe implemented after workers in the Guild rejected an earlier concessions package.
Here is today's economic report. 7 in 10 workers believe the company they work for is taking appropriate actions to deal with the recession. The survey from Robert Half International also found most employees believe their employer will come out stronger once the recession is over. However, 3 out of 10 employees report that their company is off track to cope with the recession.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped off. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
fellow American. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, welcome back to the Guy James Show. Huh? How you doing? I don't have the song they're asking for about Maria, but I can think of a couple of songs. Maria... I just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found how wonderful a sound can be. Maria, I just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly, I was getting carried away. And I know another one. I know another one. How do you solve a problem like Maria? Remember that from, Sound of Music, the nuns were singing? Okay. That would be more appropriate there for Sanford. How do you solve a problem like Maria, don't you think? Because he got a problem with Maria, all right. I don't know that Maria's got a problem, but he does. Oh, hey, we're gonna shift gears in just a couple of minutes, and maybe we'll go back to this afterwards. I'm not sure. But we're expecting a call from Representative John Yarmuth from the 3rd District of Kentucky. To talk about where we're at on the health care right now. I think it's looking bleak. That's my opinion. We'll talk to the congressman. Maybe he's in a more upbeat mood than I am about it. I don't know. Did you guys check out the pictures at the fitznews.com and the one at the Zippy1300blogspot.com. Will one of you check that out? Compare the two. Zippy1300.blogspot.com and this one at fitznews.com and see if that's the same Maria. I don't think it is. So we don't know for sure which one is which. This one at fitznews.com. Who knows? Hey, let's answer the phone. It's coming from the U.S. Capitol, so let's answer it. Hello. You're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, it's John Yarmuth.
Hi, John. Representative Yarmuth, how are you?
Doing fine, thank you.
Thank you. We're live here on the Guy James Show. I saw it come in from the U.S. Capitol, so I thought I'd swing it right on over there. It's a pleasure to have this with you. And before I ask you anything else, I do want to thank you. On behalf of myself and all of my listeners, not just for being here today, but I want to thank you so much for pushing the credit card Bill of Rights and landing that on the president's desk. That's much appreciated by the people throughout the country.
Well, you know, I'm glad to do it. It's a long time coming and something that everybody who's looked at that situation knew was ripe for reform, and I think it's going to make a big difference for the American people and begin to restore some of the what we call economic justice in the country.
Now, you're in the 3rd over around Louisville, right?
Exactly. I am. My district is I have nothing outside of the city limits.
Oh, I didn't know that was all within confined within the city. I love.
Yeah, actually. Well, the mayor, in 2000, the city and county merged, so I essentially have, the mayor and I have almost identical constituencies. I think we have 12 precincts difference out of 520.
Is he a Democrat?
He is a Democrat. He's been there for 20 years.
I love Louisville. I've been there and go on the Star of Louisville downtown, you know, the boat that goes up the river. I don't know if it's still there or not, but it's a wonderful city. Historic and really a wonderful city. The reason we asked you to come on the program today was to talk about where do you think, in your opinion right now, where are we on the health care issue? Are we making progress? Are we going to end up with some watered-down, diluted bill that doesn't matter? Or are we going to dig in and just fight like hell to get what it is we really need?
Well, I sure hope we don't end up with a watered bill. I know that on the House side, we have the three committees that have been working on this bill, Ways and Means, which I sit on, and Energy and Commerce, and Education and Labor, are all strongly committed to making sure there's a public insurance option so that the insurance companies will have to compete for Americans' business and not the other way around. What I like to say is the alternative to doing that is that you have to trust the insurance companies to fix the problem. And the insurance companies are a big part of the problem. So we've got to have, as President Obama says, we need the public option to keep them honest. But we also need it to make sure that no matter where you are in the country, no matter what your circumstances, you will always have the opportunity to buy affordable quality coverage. And in my state, we have places in Appalachia, eastern Kentucky, where I have great fears that there will never be an insurance company who will want to do business in eastern Kentucky if they have to do things like give up the pre-existing conditions and so forth. We have a hard enough time as it is in that part of the state. So, and there'll be many areas of the country where it will be very difficult to find somebody who will insure our citizens if there's no public option.
Well, that's right. I certainly agree with you on that. And as President Obama said, what was it, Monday in his press conference or Tuesday, I forget what day, if the government can't do anything right, like everybody's claiming, why are they afraid of the competition?
I know. I love that point, and I made that at a hearing several weeks ago, as a matter of fact. And the extension of that argument is, if they are not able to compete, it won't be because of the public option. It will be because the only thing they are doing is paying bills and overcharging people. If they truly can add value to their customers, then they will be able to compete. And, I come from the district that houses Humana. They're based in my district.
I was just about to ask
very
you
large
that.
Health.
I wondered
yeah,
if they were
very
still.
Large health. Yeah, they're still there. And they've actually figured out ways to add value for their customers. They do it in Medicare Advantage. So I don't know why they can't compete. And then if you... Again, extend the argument. If the only thing that matters is cost, then their inference is that they're overcharging the people. If that's all the difference there is between a public option and them, then they're overcharging people so they can pay people like the CEO of United Healthcare $320 million over 5 years. Well, the public option CEO won't make anything like that. So. That's just an argument that doesn't hold up. And again, if all they can do is charge more for the same service, then do the policyholders, do the American people really owe them a right to exist? I don't see how.
Well, if the government, if we do have a workable government program move in and provide real competition for these companies, and we're hearing, some of them will have to go out of business and will lose jobs. I guess you have to weigh all that out. That might even be the case. But we're looking at the general welfare here, are we not, except just for a few?
Exactly. And it's not just a question of the general welfare. It's really the sustainability of our economy. Because we had Christine Romer here at the Budget Committee last week. She said if we don't make these major reforms, that by 2040, that's only 30 years away, healthcare will be 35% of GDP. That's twice what it is right now. And that's clearly not sustainable. We already have projections that if we don't do anything within 7 or 8 years, a family policy for a family of four will cost $25,000. That's not sustainable for almost any American family, and it's certainly not sustainable for employers who are paying for their employees' policies. So it's a question of, it won't make any difference at that point if the insurance companies lose jobs because the economy will be in the tank because healthcare has basically been, no pun intended, but been like a cancer that has eaten the economy up.
Well, it sure has. And almost everybody knows, if they don't have a personal horror story to tell, I do. And if you don't have a personal story, you know somebody who does in a healthcare system with at least they're saying 30% of it is waste. I'm sure we can overcome.
Right.
And we've got the Medicare example. We've got the VA example of how to run a healthcare system and keep the cost down. I just don't know what's – well, I do know what's the problem. It's money, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it always boils down to that.
Well, sure. And it's interesting. We had a witness yesterday in the Ways and Means Committee who was, using these fear tactics, saying, oh, it's going to turn into the Canadian plan. If we do this, we're going to be like Canada. And this really is we're the only country in the world that has tried to do health care the way we're doing it. First of all, that has an employer-based system, and nobody else in the world has that. And virtually every other, well, not virtually, every other industrialized nation in the world has some form of national health coverage. There are a lot of hybrid plans, so that the government gives you a certain level of coverage, and then you supplement it as you are able and need for your family, just like people do in Medicare right now. So what we've done is tried to turn health care into basically a totally private, outside of Medicare and Medicaid, but for everybody else, a totally private system driven by profit. And nobody else has tried to do that, and it's turned out to be unsustainable here.
Well, it's
so, I'm a capitalist. I believe in capitalism, and I like for people to make money, but health care is a very different thing. It is not something that necessarily responds to the laws of supply and demand, because when you're sick, you don't have an option of getting care. And, the demand is something you can't control. And we've allowed all these industries to grow up basically unregulated. And, we've gotten in trouble like so many, in so many other areas. We've dug ourselves into a hole. So, what's really important though, you mentioned money and that's critical, but it's the human cost, and that's what we are primarily focused on. And my horror story, which is not a personal family one, but we had a campaign worker in my 2006 campaign, a wonderful young woman who was severely disabled, was wheelchair-bound, had so many things wrong with her that she said her prescription drugs alone would have been $3,000 a month if she wasn't covered by SSI, the Medicare for Disability. Well, she was in her mid-20s. She had a boyfriend who worked for a supermarket chain making $11 an hour. They wanted to get married, but they couldn't get married because if they got married, she would have lost her SSI coverage, and the supermarket chain wouldn't put her on the policy because she was too expensive. So what kind of a system is it when you have two people who love each other and want to get married and can't because of an insurance issue?
That company, does that company start with a K?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm not picking on Kroger.
No.
I mean, that just happened to be the one. I didn't know that everybody in your audience would know what Kroger was.
Well, I used to live in Ohio. I'm born and bred in Ohio, but although our show's listening to nationwide, I live in South Florida now. I have to tell you, we have many, many Canadians come here and live here half the year, not quite half the year, 5 months. And they get back home, and if you would tell a Canadian that, and they have told me this, you Americans should be so lucky as to have a healthcare system like we have. I hear that all the time from them.
Right. There are so much alarmism and the fear factor that's being played around this issue, and you'll find people who love their system, who love the British system, and some people who have complaints with it. The question is, I love it when people say, well, people in Canada have to wait. I said, you try to get an appointment with your allergist or a dermatologist recently in the United States? I mean, you wait forever. And everybody's experience is a little bit different. But the fundamental point is everyone knows we have a dysfunctional system. Everybody knows we overpay for a lot of things. Everybody knows that we're on an unsustainable path, and now's the time to do something. Christine Romer said the other day that every year that we wait to reform health care in this country costs us $2 trillion down the road. So when we're talking about spending, you know, $100 billion a year, which is about 20% or less of what we're going to spend on defense, to fix our healthcare system when we're facing these long-term dramatic losses in cost to society, it's pretty clear the time is now to act and act decisively.
Well, Congressman Yarmuth, I know what my audience wants you to do. Please share with us what you want my audience to do to help in this instance.
Well, there are two things. We're not going to get any Republican support on this in this venture, I don't believe. They've taken the position pretty much that they can't that if we pass health care reform, that even if they help, they won't get any credit for it. We'll get all the credit. So they're basically, their agenda is to stop us from achieving what will be a great victory for the American people, and certainly would be a political victory as well. So, you know, I wouldn't bother wasting, I wouldn't spend much time on Republican representatives, although, you know, it'd be nice if we got a few. But what we really need is to make sure everybody who has a Democratic representative in the House or the Senate weighs in with them and says, you know, this is really critical, and don't get weak-kneed. The polls are overwhelmingly supportive of what we're trying to do, and we've got people, many of whom have taken contributions from health insurance industry and pharmaceutical industry, and get a little bit weak in the knees when these issues come up, and we can't be timid. We've got to move ahead and be as strong and as confident as the American people want us to be, and they clearly do. American people want us to fix this system.
I know it's only a dream, but wouldn't it be wonderful if every time a ballot was cast by every member of the House or the Senate, and the only thing that was involved in it is what's best for America?
Oh, you aren't kidding. And I've said long before I ever even dreamed about running for this job that we've got to get the big money out of the political system, because efforts like this to reform healthcare or the energy system or whatever it may be are going to be just that much more difficult because there's so much big money in the system. And I'm a strong proponent of public financing of campaigns. I wish President Obama would make that an issue, but I know it's healthcare and energy and education are his three top priorities. Maybe after we get those done, we can work on political reform, and that would help everybody.
Well, there is quite a bit on the platter right now, that's for sure.
That's right.
Congressman Yarmuth, thank you so much for appearing on the program today. It's good to hear from you. Appreciate what you're doing. Again, I want to thank you on behalf of the audience for the credit card bill of rights that you fought for and helped out with, and I know you'll keep your heels dug in on this health care issue as well. Thanks so much for being
Absolutely.
On the Guy James Show.
Thanks, Guy. Good to be with you.
Thank you. There's a guy that that will do the right thing. That's why we ask him on today. I know his opinions on this. I know he will do the right thing. And as he mentioned, it's not going to do any good to talk to any of the Republicans or badger them. Just forget it. Don't waste your time. But we've got the Blue Dogs to contend with. We've got others that are in our party. If we lose this battle, it won't be because of the Republicans. As I mentioned yesterday, if we lose any of these battles, it'll be because of Democrats not standing up for Democratic values and Democratic principles. There's no other way you can put it. There's nothing else you can say. We have the numbers. Even in the Senate, we talk about the 60, the 60, the 60. No, we don't have 60. And with Kennedy out and with Byrd out, we actually only have 57 right now, including Bernie Sanders. So we cannot get to 60. But damn it, use the nuclear option. If ever there was a time when the nuclear option to get rid of that damn 60 rule, if it ever was needed, it's needed now. Don't worry about the political ramifications of it. Get rid of it. A lot of Democrats say, well, we can't do that. We can't do that, or maybe the Republicans, they'll exact revenge on us. Well, if you do this, and if you get a health care bill passed that's meaningful and helpful to the people of the United States, if you get the immigration problem settled, if you get these wars, the problem with the wars we've got settled, if you get many of these things that are on the platter right now, the plate, if you solve these problems, you're not going to have to worry about the Republicans exacting revenge on you politically for one hell of a long time, because they will be in the background for decades if you get these things passed. So let's not worry about the politics of this along those lines. I for one think that's absurd that they can't go ahead and blow it up, get rid of the nuclear option, use the nuclear option on this, and get it back to where we can get it with a majority. So, reconciliation, absolutely. You only need 50 or 51 votes for passage. There are ways to do this. And if the Democrats will just man up and woman up on this, and like I just mentioned to the congressman, cast your vote with only one thing in mind: what's best for this country. Not who contributed to me. Not who's going to vote for me if I do this or that. I'm going to cast a vote with a clear conscience, what's best for the country. Oh my, how different things would be in this country if that were the case. You know it and I know it. We're going to pause for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes or two.
Super trooper beams are going to blind me, but I won't feel blue like I always do, because somewhere in the crowd there's...
She may wish I was. MonicaZala.com. I do return my phone calls, but it might take me a couple of days. Thanks for calling.
To page this person, press 5 now. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys. We'll keep you poor so you've got no choice but to join the army in your
front. Hi, is this Martha?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Martha. Welcome to the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, great to hear from you.
I apologize for messing up the phone there a moment ago.
Oh, no problem. I figured it was my wonderful signal.
It's a pleasure to have Martha Zoller. I know my audience probably doesn't know a lot about you. Martha is a popular conservative talk show host from Atlanta area. Am I right, Atlanta area?
That's right. Well, and I'm syndicated all over Georgia.
All over Georgia, and you might tell
yes.
from the accent that she's a Georgian, all right. And
that's right.
I first met Martha at the Democratic National Convention last year. She was doing her show from there, as was I. I don't know why they let her in, but they did. And and she's a delightful person, and we actually. We had a delicious Chinese dinner and actually stayed near at the same place. So I got to know Martha a little bit, and she was on the show out then. Martha, thank you for coming on today. And
and we haven't been exchanging inappropriate emails since then either.
No. no, that's right.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that. I guess I don't think along those lines. I asked you on today to talk about this situation with Governor Sanford.
Sure.
It's down in your neighborhood for sure, and you live in the Bible Belt, and this is an ugly, ugly thing. And I wonder how the people of South Carolina and Georgia did you ever live in South Carolina?
Well, actually, my mother's from South Carolina, and I have my sister lives in South Carolina. And I've got probably in the upstate region of South Carolina, I've got quite a number of listeners from the overlap of the signals. And I have to tell you, I mean, first of all, it's disappointing. I think that the governor, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. I think Rush Limbaugh put it best that lust makes people do things that they would never do in a sane moment. That's not to justify it at all, because he did a terrible thing. And as a wife and a mother listening to his press conference yesterday, what I heard was him listing his wife and children as third and fourth in the people that he hurt behind the woman that he was involved with and the people of South Carolina, which I didn't like one bit. I think that he's got a lot of healing to do. Now, does that mean, you know, if it turns out that he didn't involve state money in this and all this, there is some hope that his political life in South Carolina can be reconciled, but his national political aspirations are done.
Do you, that's what I was going to ask. Do you think he'll be able to ride this out as governor of South Carolina?
You know, I think that if there is no use of state money in any of these trips that he took, he might be able to. However, South Carolina, as you know, part of the reason why, you know, the whole interesting juxtaposition between Iowa and South Carolina and New Hampshire is that New Hampshire's, you know, one kind of state. Iowa is sort of the Midwest, and South Carolina is a very conservative state, okay? So, you know, and even though it's got a, at least for the Republican primary, it's a very interesting thing because it's got the highest number of black voters in the Democratic primary and in the Republican of any state. And it's in the Republican primary, it's a very, very conservative primary, very Christian conservative primary. So I got to tell you, if it looks like there is any state money involved in this, he's done. If it is just a personal thing, but that kind of thing, he has an opportunity to make it right and to stay in. He's only got a year left, and there's already people vying. Now, he may have somebody come to him and say, you know what, if you let the lieutenant governor, who's also a Republican, maybe you should step aside, let him go in as the incumbent, and then maybe we can save this governor's seat for 2010. You know, a lot of people said back in the Clinton days that if Bill Clinton had stepped aside for Al Gore and let Al Gore run as the incumbent, it would have been a different outcome.
Well, I think it probably would have. I would be surprised. You know, when I think of the South, when I think of the Bible Belt and I think of the South, I think of South Carolina. First and foremost, I don't think there's any place more Southern than maybe you Georgians would argue with me on that, but I don't know. It seems like the South is South Carolina to me.
Right. Well, it's South Carolina, it's Georgia, not so much Atlanta, but Georgia, it's Alabama, Mississippi, you know, all through there, and then really North Florida to a point. You know as well as I do, North Florida is pretty Southern. I mean, it's pretty much like, you know, it's very, you know, Florida is such an interesting state, and the reason why we have such a, you know, you never know what's going to happen in Florida is because it's got very distinct populations depending on where you are in Florida.
Oh, and up in what we call the Big Bend area up there, that may as well be part of Alabama or, you know, in Georgia.
That's right.
There is no difference in through that area. Well, Martha, are things not right between the lieutenant governor and the governor? There seemed to be, over the weekend, there seemed to be something really odd about the relationship between the lieutenant governor of South Carolina and the governor. It seemed to me that the lieutenant governor maybe was talking out of school, or I don't know. What is that situation?
It's a different sort of thing. In most states, they do it this way, that they're elected separately. So it's not like you're running on a ticket with somebody and you have your own agenda. It's not the agenda of the governor. And I think that as the weekend went on, it was like the more times he tried to, you know, I'm sure you and I have been in these situations, but here he is, lieutenant governor, and he probably thought that the governor's staff was holding out on him, you know, that he needed to talk to the governor or thought he needed to talk to the governor. He couldn't get him, and that somebody was holding back. And I really think that's probably, he just got madder and madder and madder, plus he wants to be governor. Okay, I'm sure that that's what the part is. And really, it was irresponsible of Mark Sanford. If I were queen of the world, I would kick him out, okay, because it was irresponsible for him to go off for 5 days and not make some kind of arrangement for what would happen if. And it turns out that he was out of the country seeing this woman when they had that terrible tornado a few months ago and didn't get back for the first couple of days. So he is, you know, he is an executive of a state. He's unfortunately, you know, he may not like it, but he's accountable at all times. I mean, it would be like Barack Obama disappearing, you know, for a weekend and not telling Joe Biden where he's going.
Yeah, it would.
It's not the right thing.
Well, let me ask you, you know, here we run up against, and you know where we liberals are coming from on this. It's the hypocrisy. We are tired of hearing one thing about family values and all this and that, and then we see one after another, not using family values, and still yet the conservative community is willing to forgive these folks
okay to forgive. And well, the good news about hypocrisy is that means that there are standards, because if you don't have standards, then there is no hypocrisy. You know, if nobody cares what anybody does, then you can't be a hypocrite. So, you know, from that standpoint, it makes me feel good as a Christian conservative. That means there are some lines that you still can't cross over, and I'm happy about that. I mean, as far as forgiving people, you know, I think you ought to forgive people, but at the same time, you know, there's a certain amount. I've had a Democratic friend of mine send me a list of all the different scandals over the last, you know, 20 years. And, you know, it worked out to about half Democrats and half Republicans. I mean, it's been more Republicans lately, but there were a few years where there were more Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's just, and I think it has to do with power and the loss of power. If you feel like, you know, you're about to lose power, you're going to do more stupid things. So I'm not going to claim anything, but you're right that as people that are taking what they think is the moral high ground, when you start taking the moral high ground, you better be sure that you belong there. You better be sure there's not sand under your feet instead of solid, you know, stone. Okay? So, I mean, in Stanford, you know, I saw him at CPAC in February. Obviously, we now know that his wife knew about this affair back when I heard him speak at CPAC 5 months ago. And, you know, he was quoting scripture. And as a Christian, I cannot stand people that use their Christianity to get ahead, but yet don't walk the walk. And I'm much more interested at 50 years old in people who walk the walk than people who talk the talk.
Well, here we have.
Even though I make a living talking. So.
Well, the thing is, having just met you for a short time and had some good discussions with you, I know you are sincere when you say that.
Well, thank you.
I know you
thank
are.
You.
I know you talk the talk and walk the walk and all that. And that's why I asked you to come on today. I knew I'd get an honest assessment of what this is all about. And you understand where the liberals are coming from.
I understand where they're coming from, and I'd be having a tea party today, too. But I wouldn't have too much of a tea party because, you know, your day is going to come because you know as well as I do that they don't really care. I mean, they're going to be trying to dig things up on anybody right now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the world we live in. And that's why, you know, I say to my children, don't ever put anything in an email you don't want to see in the newspaper.
Yeah.
I mean, don't ever think an email is private. Now, I'm not encouraging them to do things they shouldn't do, but at the same time, it was just disappointing to me that Governor Sanford would act in this way. And to go off, he's got four children and he goes off for a week at Father's Day, especially at a time now that we know that he and his wife were estranged, okay? We didn't know that before, but to especially leave his children on Father's Day when he knows that the kids are probably feeling a little uncertain about where he's going to be in their life, it's just terrible. Terrible.
You know, one of the things that, one of the decent things out of this whole thing is I noticed one of the things that always makes me sick when these come up was that his wife wasn't standing there like the good little wife. Being 100% behind
like
him.
Like Elliot Spitzer's wife and Governor McGreevy's wife, Democrats.
And Larry Craig's wife stood dutifully beside him.
Yeah.
And so did, what's his name down?
And he still hadn't resigned.
and what's his name down in New Orleans? Vitter.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's horrible thing.
I don't think you should put your wife through that. But I will tell you, you know, I still believe in having high standards. I still believe in doing that. And I don't think we lower the standards just because some people fall short.
Well, that's true. Oh, by the way, one of my listeners wants me to ask you, throwing a monkey wrench into things here, ask you how's your insurance coverage? How do you feel about the health care plan we're going on right now or we're trying to do?
Well, I don't even know where it stands right now. I would much rather see something that tries to cover the uninsured rather than trying to restructure the whole thing. I have no faith. You know, I say to President, and I've got a column coming out about this tomorrow on humanevents.com, but I would say to President Obama, if you're telling me you can save $313 billion, I'm going to pretend I'm from Missouri and I'm going to say, show me.
Mm-hmm.
I have no faith. You know, if we waited this long, why can't we show that they're actually going to save money? Because what they've done so far is that the things that were put in place by Congressman Nathan Deal, who's from Georgia, who was head of the health committee back when Republicans were in control, were actually some money-saving things that were in place in Medicare. And when the Democrats got in control, and if they're right, they're in power, they stripped it out. I would rather see something that would help the people that are uninsured. And this was my position on the prescription drug plan, too. I didn't want to see a one-size-fits-all prescription drug. I wanted to find a way to insure those that didn't have the insurance, but not try to restructure the whole thing. That's where I am on it. Now, I am married to a primary care physician, you know, so I get, you know, I deal with this every day. So, you know, I just to be fair about that.
Is your husband a member of the AMA?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one of the about.
But I will tell you, you know, people talk about it. We have made less money every year since 1998. Okay, and he is not working fewer hours. All right, so it's not a case that, and we do well. Don't get me wrong. I don't want you crying in my beer. You know,
I wasn't crying.
But he works very hard for less money every single year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll reserve the right to have you back on some of these days. And
you got
and,
it. And I'd love to have it. I'd love to get back on with you, Guy.
As I saw you on, were you on national TV the other night? Where was it?
MSNBC.
All right. Was it with, I don't know, Lionel? Is that who it was?
Yeah. He's so crazy.
Yeah. Well,
He's so crazy.
I enjoyed watching it and having known you.
Thank you.
And for all my listeners, I want to let you know that Martha's not like most conservatives. She's really a nice person. And we'll have you back on, and we'll argue
Thanks.
This healthcare thing till the cows come home.
You got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Martha. She really is a delightful person, and she'll talk the Republican dogma from now till sunset, and then back up again in the morning. That's just the way she is. She's 100% solid, hardcore conservative, and Southern Baptist, the whole deal. But the thing is, having gotten to know her a little bit out in Denver, I know she's honest, and it's not a put on, and so. I know what you get from her is the honest feeling. Now, that's why it's interesting to me to talk to somebody like her, because when you see a Hannity or a Limbaugh or a Beck, especially that group, you don't know whether they're sincere or not. And, you get out in the field with people and you talk to people like Martha. I know she's sincere. I know she's 100% sincere. That's why it's interesting to talk to her. And we'll have her back on, and we'll have a debate over the healthcare thing, and we'll let you in on it as well. And we'll just fight it out someday. And I think you'll find that she's a reasonable person, and if we make good points, she'll accept them. So we'll do that in the near future. We'll get Martha back on, and we'll just fight this out. All right, we're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Shook it up. I never loved nobody fully. Always one foot on the ground. And by protecting my heart truly, I got lost in the sounds I hear in my mind. All of these voices I hear in my mind. All of these words I hear in my mind. All of this music, and it breaks my heart. And it breaks my heart. And it breaks my heart. Thank you.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Brandon Hirsch. Our top item today, without missing a beat, Fox News mislabeled Mark Sanford a Democrat while airing live coverage of the press conference in which the disgraced South Carolina governor admitted to having an affair. Fox News has a long history of incorrectly identifying unpopular or scandal-ridden Republicans as Democrats. Just ask former Florida Congressman Mark Foley. Spewing his usual vitriol, conservative leader Rush Limbaugh had this to say about President Obama and his health care reform proposals.
I think that Obama looks at profits as evil. He's like a lot of other dictators. He's got the private sector, and he thinks it's always going to be there to be raped.
But today's most outrageous comment comes from Pittsburgh radio host Jim Quinn talking about slavery and reparations.
If your ancestors hadn't come over here for whatever reason, where would you be right now? Hey, ingrates, get on your knees. Kiss the American dirt beneath you, and please, shut up!
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
The consideration, if we look at American history between 1942 and 1947, the data that was collected by the Census Bureau was handed over to the FBI and other organizations at the request of President Roosevelt. And that's how the Japanese were rounded up and put into the internment camps. I'm not saying that that's what the administration is planning to do, but I am saying that private personal information that was given to the Census Bureau in the 1940s was used against Americans to round them up in a violation of their constitutional rights.
Yeah, but we've had a lot of good years since then.
I mean,
that was a different time and a different era. We've had decades since then when, at least to our knowledge, this information hasn't been abused. So how do you respond to those who say, look, we've been doing it for decades since then? The law is what the law is, and you as a lawmaker should know better than to break it.
Well, I think it is important that we are not a nation of lawbreakers. I am just not comfortable with the way this census is being handled, with associating with ACORN, with the questions that are being asked, with Americans being compelled to give this information. How will this be cross-checked? Will it be held privately? And Americans, I'm not encouraging Americans not to fill out the census. I'm saying for myself and for my family, our comfort level is we will comply with the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2. We will give the number of the people in our home, and that's where we're going to draw the line.
Oh, Michelle Bachmann, always good for a laugh or two. We couldn't have our comedy routine today with our gentleman from Minneapolis. My goodness, we're down to 5 minutes left in the program today. I don't know where the time went. I do want to mention that for the past few days, for the past, what, week, 10 days, however long it's been, first it was all about John Ensign, and then we talked about the upheaval in Iran every day for a while. That's all that was on the news. And all the while, our great victory in Iraq has not been talked about. Squeezed right out of the news, Iraq. And so, real quickly, let me let you know what's gone on in Iraq this past week while we were paying attention to the riots in Iran, in Tehran, and to the John Ensign problem and now to the Mark Sanford problem. Just a couple of little things that happened in Iraq where we've got this great victory that everybody wants us to think we got. Peace, prosperity, all those great things. The Kurds are claiming Kirkuk as their own. That's a problem. Large car bomb in Sadr City killed at least 50. That's yesterday. 5 separate fatal or multi-casual casualty incidents in Mosul yesterday. The day before that, the Kurds declared central government control over Kurdish oil reserves unconstitutional. On the 21st, the police in Baghdad are killed in clashes, 9 of them. On the 21st, more fighting in Mosul. On the 20th, a large truck bomb killed at least 60 in northern Iraq. And this is just only a slight bump up of violence from the recent problems. It's not unusual, not an unusual week. So here we are with bombings. I was going to say going through the roof, but that's not a good way to put it, is it, on a serious subject like this. One bombing after another every day in this country where we are now claiming a military victory. I don't think so.
I don't think it's any kind of a military victory. I don't think we've helped ourselves in Iraq, which, let's face it, was our first concern. Should have been anyway. And secondly, the claims of helping the Iraqi people, I don't think there are too many of them that would agree with you right now. They hate the government they have, the puppets that we shoved in there. It's ugly. We've accomplished nothing in Iraq, is what is my point. We've accomplished absolutely nothing, despite the claims of the Bush administration and those who still linger around and say we had such a great time, great success in Iraq. We did not. We, by and large, we have not helped the people of Iraq. They're no better off. In fact, they're worse off today than they were when Saddam Hussein was the president. And don't get me wrong. He was a real bastard, and he needed to go. But what we've done there, the invasion of Iraq, has just, well, it's had the opposite effect of what we hoped it would. It has not helped bring democracy to that area. It has not helped whatsoever. Well, I want to thank you for being with us this weekend. Enjoyed it very much. Don't forget, Bob is in Washington right now. If I do find out that he aided Fogo de Chao tonight, I'm going to be very angry. I think he's going to go against my wishes and do it anyway. But Bob will be back in his seat on Monday. I'm not sure if John's filling in tonight or not. Please do remember that this is a listener-supported program, and we could use your assistance right now very, very much. I know everybody's saying that right now, and I know things are tough for most people, but we, you know, the old change jar over in the corner of the studio here is getting pretty dry. So I hope you would help. And you can do that by going to theguyjamesshow.com, theguyjamesshow.com. Have a good weekend, everybody. You listen to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.